On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we talk about the 12th Doctor, the future of the Marvel and DC cinematic universes, Welcome to Night Vale, the My Immortal web series, and why Pacific Rim really is the best thing ever. Welcome to the inaugural episode of Nerd and Tie, a podcast for nerd geeks and geeky nerds and anyone who really just stumbled across it on the internet in the hope to find something better to do. I am Trey. I'm joined by Fur and Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Nick, say hello. There we go. And hopefully we can entertain you for the next chunk of indeterminate time because it's the internet and we don't have a schedule to follow, so y'all can just deal with that already. To start things out, we're recording this on Sunday, the 4th of August, by the way, so just to make more sense. Today, the BBC announced the 12th actor who will be playing the Doctor in Doctor Who. And, of course, they announced it, Peter Capaldi, which if you were listening to this and you don't know that already, you've been, thankfully, off of Tumblr. Peter Capaldi is a fairly well-known name in British television. And film, notably, I've been a fan of his for a while. He played the Angel Islington in the original Neverwhere television series. He's in the thick of it and in The Loop, of course, most famously as the heavily swearing character. And my favorite role of his, though, is in the Hugh Laurie sitcom 40-something, in which he plays a doctor alongside actually another character in there is played by Fur's favorite actor, Benedict Cumberbatch, so... He's also no stranger to Doctor Who, having appeared in The Fires of Pompeii, which is an episode now that contains two doctors and two companions, if you look closely enough now. And he also, of course, was in the third season of Torchwood. Capaldi is 55, which is kind of a return to very old form for the Doctor. They've been skewing younger these last few regenerations. What are y'all thoughts?
Well, if I might start off, first off, when the announcement came out today, I myself was at work, and
for shame.
And what was that?
I said for shame.
For shame, right? So I tried to schedule my breaks around when that announcement was going to be made. It was very hyped up leading up to that. People were sitting on the edge of their chairs. When the announcement came out, I got about 50 texts right in a row from various contacts letting me know who it was.
Or on Tumblr, I'd like to add.
I will say you missed nothing by watching the live show. I watched it and... on accident, really, because I just happened to turn on my TV as it came on. It was boring.
I believe it.
Clip show for 25 minutes, and then you meet. Then Peter comes out.
But like as soon as I found out who it was, my initial reaction was who. I think like a lot of maybe American fans of the show. I had my choices leading up to the announcement of the Doctor. The actor that played Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter movies, Gleason, is his last name. There are a couple of other people. Idris Elba was kind of a pipe dream for me. I was really hoping for Idris Elba. But Capaldi, I mean, I looked him up on IMDb, and I'm like, oh, it's that guy. I've seen him before.
You most recently saw him in World War Z.
As a Who doctor.
I hate
everything.
He's the second actor to play the Doctor to play a minor role in a zombie film.
Oh.
That's right, Christopher Eccleston. There we go, yeah.
There you go.
I forget, yeah, 28 days later. But, looking at his IMDb and then going down the list and seeing, wait, oh, he was that and that. He was that and that. Oh, he was him and that. I think my favorite role of his, of course, being in The Loop, what's his character? Malcolm Tucker. Very vulgar character, but I just, I found myself like an occasion, quoting some very, very vulgar phrases like that under my breath. specifically from In the Loop. It'll be interesting to see what he brings to it. As the day wore on, I got to the point where, oh, I'm okay with this guy as the Doctor. I like seeing an older Doctor, somebody that maybe isn't just they're not going out for the heartthrob look that BBC could have easily done.
It's been since Pertwee that we had someone of this age range in the part.
Yeah, and I think this is correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Capaldi is the second oldest Doctor next to Hartnell, if I'm...
Same age as Hartnell when he started.
Same age.
Yeah, although they made Hartnell look older than he was when he started playing the part.
But I think Capaldi is going to be great. I want him to calm down a little bit more. I thought that that Smith got a little bit too excitable towards the end of his run, to the point where it was just frustrating to watch the show.
Well, it's interesting that we're going from like one of the youngest Doctors to one of the oldest, you know, right back and forth right there. There's been this trend since Tom Baker to have actors in mostly actors in their late 30s and early 40s, with the exception of Davison, who was, I think, 30 when he started playing the part. And then Matt Smith was this massive jump down, which kind of made sense after Tennant, because Tennant was age appropriate with the other actors, but he looks about 10 years younger than he is. At least in the lighting on Doctor Who. I enjoyed Matt Smith. I know that not everyone in this conversation has the same opinions about the quality of the show.
Matt Smith, I would like to clarify, I had very little problem with his performance. I had a lot of problems with the writer who's still there. So
okay, so I have to address this. So Moffat is not a perfect writer, and there are many problems with the show. Overall, I still love the show. There are many issues, but I want to point out that ever since Moffat took over, it's all about how terrible Moffat's version of the show is, and how he's the worst showrunner. But I want to point out, the entire internet, during Russell T. Davies' run, kept talking about how the worst episodes were written by Russell T. Davies, how horrible of a showrunner he was.
And I agree with that, except I will also point out that I was someone who tried to defend Russell T. Davies during
the critics. I like the show under Russell T. Davies too, but the critics were right. Every single companion, with the exception of one, wanted to bone the Doctor in the Russell T. Davies run.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is true. I'm not denying. You know, but the thing is, at least I still feel that both Moffat and Davies have one thing in common. I like their run more than John Nathan Turner's run. But that's going
you'll
way...
Have to, you'll have to refresh me what era that was, because that I don't was, know.
John Nathan Turner was the guy that came in at the very end of Tom Baker's run.
Oh, yeah.
And his...
That is
a damn question. And people used to... actually, he had a Stephen Moffat-like reception from fans, in that everyone's like, oh my god, he's a fan, and he's into all the old characters, and he wants to bring back all these references to older stuff. People were really accepting of him at the beginning, until he made it his goal, his explicit goal, that he wanted to rein in Tom Baker. And then after that,
that was the whole point of the damn show. Well, no, Tom Baker years were because, you know, and one of the reasons why Who was popular internationally,
right,
largely has to do with Tom Baker's over-the-top performance. And it Tom Baker's performance is what saved a lot of those scripts.
And, well, he thought Tom Baker had too much control, and then he also wanted to... He kept getting so caught up in bringing back old continuity that it started just getting a little too big, a little too over the top, a little too...
Well, this is...
It got too caught up in itself, I guess.
Well, and that's pre-internet. You couldn't just look up stuff that you were missing.
Which made it all the more like bizarre, and he would do all these weird throwbacks, and he would do these other weird changes. Like, he actually did try to make the TARDIS chameleon circuit work for a little bit, and that wasn't particularly well received.
At one point it was an organ, wasn't it? At one point
was in story that he had that going. Yeah, it was a tackle scene, which was a Colin Baker story, which in and of itself has issues.
Well, the less said about the Colin Baker tenure on Doctor Who, the better. Which, admittedly, was the writer's and producer's fault, and not Colin Baker's fault himself.
Colin Baker is a lovely man.
Colin Baker wanted to dress the character all in black. When Baker saw Chris Eccleston walk out of the walk on screen, he said, "Holy crap! That's what I wanted my doctor to dress like."
To the credit of Character Options, who are the people who make the Doctor Who action figures. They actually put out a really cool variant figure of Colin Baker wearing like the same style outfit he wore, but it was all in dark shades of blue.
Yeah, and that was actually
a nod to him and what he wanted to kind of wear. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah.
If I can chime in a little bit on my thoughts on Mr. Capaldi and his debut, I guess, this morning.
That's right. We were talking about that earlier, weren't we?
Capaldi, yeah. The whole reason we're talking about this.
Much like Trey, I actually wasn't planning on watching this debut. It was just, I woke up and was wandering through the house, turned on the TV, and it was like, oh, hey, Bernard Cribbins is on. That's weird. And they were talking to him about Doctor Who. I stayed on, and I slowly came to realize as I became more awake that they were going to announce the new Doctor soon. And honestly, when Peter Capaldi walked out and I saw that he was older, a little wrinklier, that he looked like a more experienced actor, I was ecstatic. I'm not familiar with any of his previous work at all, honestly, save for his appearances in Doctor Who and Torchwood.
Oh, but, you've got just go on Hulu, watch The Thick of It. It's awesome.
I it looks like I have to, but because he seems from the little snippets that people keep showing me, because I've already received all sorts of snippets today, it seems like he's
and then go back and watch The Fires of Pompeii and feel bad for forgetting a character in an episode of Doctor Who.
No, I'm really excited to have an older actor playing the part because I was also getting a little weary of the young pretty boy doctors. As I also said a little bit before, I was fine with Matt Smith. I enjoyed a lot of what he brought to the role, but at the same time, I would like to see a more experienced actor doing their thing and not being a heartthrob, maybe being more of a grumpy old man with a time machine.
I don't know. I think Capaldi is a heartthrob to women in their 40s and 50s.
I've already had at least two friends of mine say that the BBC is going after their love of older men with this one. So I think the sex appeal and shipping is still going to be there, even though Peter Capaldi looks like your drunken uncle that shows up at Thanksgiving every year.
I disagree. I think he's a handsome man.
Oh, I agree, too.
With strong features. And salt gray hair. And eyes you can just get lost in.
Personally, I think it would have been nice to maybe get a different showrunner for the new Doctor. Doesn't look like that's going to happen leading up to the arrival of Capaldi in the first episode. But I would like to say that Stephen Moffat can still redeem himself in my eyes if he brings back the Quarks.
All I'm asking is that we have a arc story in that series, which is not about the Doctor's death in some way. Last three ones.
Late to the companion's reproductive organs.
Think about it. The first Matt Smith series is about the TARDIS blowing up where the Doctor died. The second one is about a plot in which the Doctor dies. And the third one is all about this person who is ostensibly Clara, showing up and dying, but no, it's because she drives into his time stream at his grave in his tomb, meaning it's another story about the Doctor's death. Oh my God.
What is Stephen Moffat wanting the Doctor to die?
It's all of these individually I have enjoyed as stories, and that's why but please, God, Stephen Moffat, do something else.
How about just one where everybody lives and is happy?
Can we just have like an arc about like maybe the Rainey is still running around if we want to go continuity heavy, or a new bad guy? A new bad guy all season.
A new bad guy or a new monster? You're allowed to do that?
Yeah, I think you are.
And
not like a Russell T. Davies new bad guy. No Slitheen, okay? No fart jokes.
Let's not talk about that episode.
Well, that episode, that recurring villain.
That recurring villain, yeah.
And they made appearances.
Stephen Moffat did do some new bad guys. Just one of them was Slender Man. And the other, he just kept using them until I stopped caring about
them. Well, you know what it is? The angels need to disappear for a while so they can get scary again.
That's precisely the one that I stopped caring about.
I feel like the angels are always only an effective enemy if they're used sparingly. And, you know, I feel like, especially with that last storyline, like, I feel like it worked within the logic of the show. Some may disagree, but it still was, like, just new bad guy, new somebody.
The moment that ruined it for me with the angels is Flesh and Stone, and Time of the Angels, where you see Amy Pond walking through the horde of angels, and we focus on one angel, and suddenly we see it start to move. That was the moment where I'm like, okay,
well, that's
Let's put the angels away for a bit.
Well, that was just disappointing in the sense that all the other, like in the first Angels episode, it said that even though there are moments where we see the statues but no one's looking at them, that the only reason they're not moving is because we're looking at them.
Exactly, yeah.
And it kind of, yeah, but... Although it made me less scared to see an angel move because it means the angels can't see me. Which helps me sleep better at night.
Kind of undid the scary part for the kids watching that episode, too, because they're like, oh, anything that records an image of an angel is an angel, too. But
I've got these DVDs, crap.
DVD isn't gonna get yet.
I think it will. Just wait. It's taking its time, Nick. I think we should probably move on from Doctor Who.
I think if we wrap it up, I think Capaldi is gonna be good, and I look forward to seeing his tenure as the Doctor. Hopefully, it's a little bit longer, perhaps, if he's good, and if he's not good, have it be short.
So we all think Capaldi's gonna be good, and hey, look, the bookies were right. Bet they bribed someone.
Yeah, yeah. I should have put money on it. I could have made a couple pounds or something.
So let's hand this over to Nick then.
Okay, next up, I guess, on our show notes for today, we're looking at San Diego Comic-Con, specifically that the two big comic book companies are, of course, bringing out their big guns for what they want to show off. And I guess we're going to start out on the Marvel end of things. And Marvel at Comic-Con is a lot like looking at British history in that it's like just a bunch of people yelling about how they won and they're going to keep on winning. We had some really big announcements at this particular event, including, of course, in the next couple months, we'll be seeing Thor 2: The Dark World, which will feature, speaking of the Doctor, Thor fighting Christopher Eccleston, a former Doctor. And also Loki looking a lot like Tommy Wiseau. So that's really exciting, if you ask me. Hopefully seeing a bit more of that fantasy element from the Thor mythos and getting him a bit more off of Earth, or at least dealing with more, I guess, Norse god-worthy opponents. Captain America 2 is shaping up to be a Bourne identity-style thriller type thing with a butt-ton of characters. And it wants to be an adaptation of Ed Brubaker's amazing comic book run, The Winter Soldier story arc. And as a big fan of Captain America,
if you don't want spoilers, don't Google The Winter Soldier.
Yeah, just don't. If you don't want to know who Winter Soldier is, it's best to not look up The Winter Soldier at all. Because it was kind of a big deal back when it did come out.
Don't.
The most shockingly, I can't believe that they're actually doing this film that they're putting together is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
Karen Gillan's in that, isn't she?
Karen Gillan, she shaved her head for it, no less.
Yeah.
So more Doctor Who actors, plus a bipedal raccoon with guns.
Who may or may not be voiced by David Tennant, according to several leads across the web, I believe.
I'm weirdly okay with that. And even an appearance by the Nova Corps. And for all you Marvel fans, they're that's really cool. For those who don't know the Nova Corps, think of it as like Marvel's version of the Green Lanterns. Really neat armor on these guys. Last but not least, I guess, of the film franchise stuff, though, we have a title for Avengers 2, and it's taking us completely by surprise after Thanos made his appearance at the credits of Avengers 1. The title is Age of Ultron. Holy balls. Ultron, of course, a major, basically like Avengers versus Terminator. Apparently, there's even some implications that we could be seeing, rather than Hank Pym designing Ultron as he did in the comics, maybe Tony Stark would be involved, which, frankly speaking, probably a good choice since they're kind of out of Tony Stark things for Tony Stark to do anyway.
Well, and Pym hasn't been introduced into the cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm. It's probably just smarter to handle things that way. Apparently, Ultron is Joss Whedon's favorite Avengers villain, so I think that there's a lot of potential in a bad guy like that. There was also some bragging about the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show that we'll have coming to ABC soon, and maybe even an Ant-Man movie in the near future.
Not just a maybe, but that is confirmed. The script is written, and I believe they are already filming that one.
Okay, well then...
That explains where Hank Pym is.
Yeah, we will get introduced to him, but just maybe not in this movie. It's not really entirely clear.
Ant-Man movie.
I could dig an Ant-Man movie. Maybe actually give Hank Pym a chance.
Wasn't that Edgar Winters who's doing the Ant-Man thing?
Yeah, there was.
Edgar Wright is writing.
Edgar Wright. Okay. I combined Edgar Wright and Alex Winters' name.
Right.
Let me just say, imagine that love child.
Edgar Wright is writing and directing Ant-Man, and actually, I have a source here in front of me saying that Ant-Man is not going to be in the Avengers 2. And that we will be seeing him in his own movie.
Okay, well, like I said, apparently, now they haven't leaked this footage to the internet, but people at the event said that there was when they showed off the title for the film, they ran a short video that showed an Iron Man mask and it being deformed into the shape of Ultron's face. So,
okay.
That's where I'm getting the Tony Stark connection from. So that's pretty scary awesome, if you ask me.
Bah, it's going to be a creation of war machines. No, wait.
I guess the other thing worth mentioning was that Loki showed up at the Marvel Press conference.
Yes, that was very cool.
Good old Hiddleston actually showed up in costume. So that was really...
From what I understand, the humidity went up by about 300% when he stepped on that stage.
You know, he's not the only person to walk around that thing in character. I know apparently Hugh Jackman walked around the San Diego Comic-Con floor as Wolverine and got nobody realized it was him.
And he got several comments like, you're too tall, man.
He is too tall. He has always been too tall.
Wolverine's supposed to be like 5'3", yeah.
5'1", I thought.
Let's be honest here, the best Comic-Con cast member dressing up as their character was Bryan Cranston walking around in that creepy Walter White mask.
Yes.
So, do you guys have any other thoughts on the Marvel?
You know, I said this when they first talked about it over a year ago, but I can't reiterate now. How weird is it they're making a Guardians of the Galaxy movie?
Right.
Like, this is not, like, an A-list or a B-list or even really a C-list title.
This is just there in the Marvel.
You know, we could do the space team that has Cyclops' data. No. Screw that one. Guardians of the Galaxy.
In my friend circles, they look at me as the comic book guy, and people have been like, who are the Guardians of the Galaxy? I'm like, frack if I know.
I had to look them up, and I feel bad because I feel like I should know this, but, you know. Somebody's excited. I'm excited because of the cast of the movie and that it might be a good movie. But
Chris Pratt and who else we got in that one? Karen Gillan, as you mentioned earlier. Potentially David Tennant. No, this is going to be the campiest superhero ever movie made,
well,
I think.
Is it really even a superhero movie, though?
It's going to be an adventure movie with the sci-fi elements of Nova. So
yeah, it's not really a superhero series. It's, you know, it, so
it It might introduce Thanos, though, more properly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Personally,
Go ahead, Trey.
I was just to say that personally, with the cinematic universe stuff aside, it's amazingly the latest Wolverine film managed to come out with a second in a row good X-Men film out of the Fox studios, which means, of course, Days of Future Past has to be terrible because that's how the pattern works, right?
Exactly. Well, you'd think this, but
we get two good movies, we get a bad movie, we get a movie that I don't even see, and then we get two good movies. My personally seeing it, of course, is an important thing in everyone's opinions of film.
Origins was a great movie if you have a budget theater and your city's downtown and you had to pay only $2 a ticket to see Liev Schreiber and Hugh Jackman beat the snot out of each other. That was a great investment.
I was just glad that in the Wolverine film that just came out that they didn't fridge Mariko like the comic books, so that was nice.
And that was welcome.
Bit of a change up with the Silver Samurai stuff. I actually have I've got the trade of a lot of the X-Men comics that were adapted into that film. So,
although it wasn't with the technically mainstream Marvel Cinematic Universe, I loved the fact that the Wolverine felt like an '80s Wolverine book.
Yeah, it's literally what it is. It's if you can find it, I think it's still in it. It might not be, but it's in the trade book. From the Ashes, a lot of that is in, which is really that book collects all the Madeline Pryor first showing up stuff, but a lot of that Logan in and Mariko stuff is collected in there. So if that's still in print, check it out. But actually, you know, I was just really happy Mariko survived the film.
Yeah, that was unexpected, but well.
Well, and I haven't read I haven't read a lot of Marvel stuff in over 10 years, and so I had to like figure out that Viper's Madame Hydra, okay.
But they can't say Hydra because the main Marvel studio still has Hydra.
Right, and to be fair though, she is Viper now in the comics.
Okay.
So, but I'm like, I don't remember there being a Viper character when I was reading. Oh, Madame Hydra, okay, because I was at the drive-in, so I could just Google things on my iPad.
But. God, you guys are nerds.
I have to admit, I see many movies in the drive-in, and I Google IMDb, and I Google an IMDb while I'm there to find out actors and things that, yeah.
No, speaking of Wolverine, I mean, something I think that we could... Days of Future Past, we mentioned. I don't know. It's looking good, I think. They just released a picture of those Sentinels, which are three times as tall as Bryan Singer is. I like big robots.
We'll get to that in a bit.
Well, I'm always a fan of biscuit tinning. Biscuit tinning. It's the sound. Okay, you know those tins that you get cookies and biscuits in, like especially Christmas cookies?
Yes.
The sound of two of those tins hitting each other is the sound of robots punching. This is a theory that came out of a guy who I knew in the Transformers fandom many years ago. But so it's the term for whenever a robot punches something, it's biscuit tinning.
I wonder if Sunrise uses the same sound effects for their giant robot shows. Because, like, basically since Gundam, every Sunrise robot show uses the same robot moving sounds.
Oh, I don't know what the official noises are. I just like the phrase biscuit tinning. Say it with me.
It's pretty fantastic.
Biscuit tinning. Makes it sound like you're in the know. Even though people actually in the know are going to look at you like an idiot if you say it in front of them. But if we say it all together, we'll get it to catch on. Say it with us, audience.
Biscuit
tinning.
Tinning. Okay.
There you go.
We're horrible people.
I guess something else that I'd throw out there, I guess in Marvel's main studio stuff, is I know Captain America is one of those topics that's really close to my heart, because actually I have my history degree because of Captain America books, and
weirdest reason to get a history degree ever.
No, that's not the reason. It's just happened to be my final paper. No. Anyway,
I prefer the shield.
Before we even came up with this podcast, Trey and I had a discussion on my doubts in terms of the directors for Captain America 2, so that's been alleviated, I will admit. So they're a pair of brothers who, I'll admit, who did a lot of work on some ensemble shows like Community.
Oh, the Russo brothers, yes.
And Arrested Development, stuff
they
like that.
They are gods. You shall bow before the Russo brothers.
The thing that I'm still in that movie is they've leaked pictures of Cap's outfit. And I'm not feeling it. I know that's like a weird thing to get caught up on, but that's kind of weird. I also am worried because there's a lot of characters listed for this movie. Like it, Cap, Winter Soldier, obviously, but Black Widow, Crossbones, Batroc the Leaper.
I think Nick Fury is in there,
yeah,
too.
Nick Fury's.
Because I know Samuel Jackson and Scarlett Johansson were spotted on the streets of Columbus when they were. It was Cincinnati or Columbus. Somewhere in Ohio. Ohio is a void.
And the
Avoid folk, Ohio.
There's just a lot of characters in the Captain America mythos. It just seems like I don't know how they're going to fit them all in. Like Batroc the Leaper, I could see like just being a one-off villain for like a street-running chase scene or something like that. Like some free-running thing like you'd see in Casino Royale. Because the way he fights in the comics, that would make sense. Yeah. But it just seems like they're listing off a lot of characters, like Crossbones. He's got this whole skinhead thing going on. The Falcon, that's another sidekick for Cap. Like, do you want to deal with him too? It just seems like a lot of characters.
Well, you know, I will say some of the characters, like Fury and Black Widow, you can just have them show up with no introduction. Like, anyone who's an established character, I don't care about, because it's, you know, it only really hurts a story if you've got to give the backstory to the audience. And those two, you know, they walk in the door. If people are watching Captain America 2 and they haven't seen Avengers, they're going to be confused anyways.
Right.
As for the rest, I think it really depends. The only thing I ever get concerned about is that they're going to, and I'm going to refer to the worst film adaptation ever of a Marvel comic series, and that is, of course, the third X-Men film, where they just named every background mutant after some named character. And, you know, totally removed the ability to ever use them unless, you know, people just ignore the fact that no one ever said Psylocke's name out loud.
I thought we were going in Fantastic Four's direction there. Never mind.
I have seen neither the Alba series or the Corman series. That's the best part about the fourth season of Arrested Development is that entire story about the Fantastic Four is very closely based off of a real thing that some of us have known about for a long time. and it was literally made to keep the rights so they could make those later films that had big budgets. And the producer said when they made those, the contract said I had to make a movie. It didn't say I had to make a good movie. And Marvel paid him lots of money not to release that film.
Wow.
Shot in less than a month.
Who needs a drink? Nick needs a drink. Okay. I think generally speaking, we're all pretty optimistic about the Marvel films. Like, I've been a fan of most of what they put out. Even like, and the stuff that they don't have direct control over, even like the X-Men movies, I'd say 4 out of 6 ain't bad. Marvel, it's always just exciting to hear what they have. Should we flip over to the other side of things, DC and what they have planned?
Sure.
Yeah, why not? Let's go
Let's
for
do
it.
Okay.
I'm along for the ride. Let's do this thing. I'm buckled in.
Listen, there. Did you guys just hear that? That was my optimism going away. So, this story started when Fur and I were recording shortly after doing one of our shows, Otaku Tonight. Fur decided to tell me.
You should mention that's a thing because people who come in through my stuff might not be familiar with it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. So I'll restart that. So this story actually kind of starts from looking at Comic-Con coverage while Fur and I were working on another project that we do, a talk show called Otaku Tonight.
Yeah, I'm not actually editing it. I'm leaving in your explanation.
Well,
Sorry, continue. I'm just teasing.
For those who don't know, Otaku Tonight is a late-night talk show that was formed in 2011, and we've kind of expanded on things, general nerdy comedy, since the inception of just the talk show. But yeah, Nick, this came out of WasabiCon, essentially in West Central Wisconsin, about 3 weeks ago.
And Fur looks over at me. He's like, "Oh, hey, Zack Snyder says news for the Man of Steel sequel." This was after I had already been kind of like mixed on how I felt about Man of Steel. And he looks at me. He's like, "Yeah, it's going to be a Batman, and it's confirmed in it." I'm like, "What?" And the more he told me, it was like, now they want to do a Superman versus Batman or Batman versus Superman movie.
A world's finest film.
Not unlike the Batman versus Superman film that was proposed way back before Batman Begins had even started filming. Yeah. This was something that I'm having a lot of trouble getting excited for, mostly because Man of Steel, I didn't feel really set up Superman very well on his own. But then to do a sequel where the focus is going to be on Superman teaming up with a much more popular character, I don't think that's going to help him too much. Also, the awesome choice, Zack Snyder, a director who I love, and everyone knows how much I love Zack Snyder. I'm sorry, I can't even say that with a straight face. But yeah, he's talking to Frank Miller about how to tell this story.
No!
Whores.
Yeah, so,
whores. Whores. Make them all whores.
So, we're not only do we have a Batman Superman movie where in a world that just likes Batman more already, but the main advisor is a guy who literally writes the Justice League as a group of idiots who can't get anything done without Batman. Oh boy.
To be fair, Barry Allen is kind of a dumbass. So,
Come on. As the resident Flash fan here, yeah.
Wally West is better.
I agree. Wally West is better. I prefer Wally West to Barry Allen.
It's funny you mentioned Flash, though, because that's what DC says they want to do with their next movie. They
2017.
Cinematic version of The Flash.
Well, did you hear they also want to do a TV series of The Flash that'll be completely unrelated?
Yep, it's actually confirmed that the TV series is happening. The CW is going to be doing it.
You know what we can't get? You know what we can't get to save our friggin' lives? A Wonder Woman film or series.
Nope,
Amazon's
never.
Been put on Amazon. The proposed Wonder Woman TV series has been put on hold, or some term which they're trying to say it's technically not killed, but really is in limbo for eternity. But and it's part of DC Comics and Hollywood's, like Warner Brothers, just general fear of anything with a female lead.
And I love this because it's they keep talking about they wanted to do this Justice League movie, but your three core Justice Leaguers are Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
They are literally the Trinity of DC. That DC like says they're the three big characters.
You can't get bigger than them, and they won't introduce, in my opinion, one of the most awesome characters of the three, maybe even the most awesome.
You know, it's my thoughts about the whole cinematic universe is that, okay, the Batman films were not perfect, that, you know, the Dark Knight trilogy were not perfect. I liked them a lot. My question is are those going to be in continuity? And if not, although I will say that I've always favored adding Batman to a Justice League movie, just throw Batman in. Everybody knows who Batman is. You don't need to tell people.
Yeah,
Batman shows up. We all know who Batman is.
My grandma knows Batman's origin story. You don't need to introduce him. They could just bring in a totally different actor, and we all know who freaking Batman is.
Right.
Which is what they're going to do anyway, because Christian Bale
it'll be Jean-Paul Valley. No, that's your new Batman.
Nicolas Cage is Batman.
Nicolas Cage as Jean-Paul Valley. We've ruined the franchise. I will say for Man of Steel, I enjoyed the film overall. I didn't think it was perfect. I loved General Zod in that film. My biggest problem with it is that it's not really necessarily a problem with the film itself. but a preference of myself is I prefer the John Byrne definition of the character that, you know, that, that he created, where Superman is Clark first, and then Superman is a persona he puts on, not the Superman is who he is and Clark Kent the persona. But
I agree 100% with you.
But the problem is that the Superman first, Clark Kent as a persona, is an equally valid interpretation of the character, which has a longer standing in the comics. It's just a dumber standing in the comics because it makes him a less interesting human being. I think Man of Steel was mostly saved because Zod, I felt, was a wonderful villain, Feora kicked some ass, and Amy Adams was brilliant.
I didn't see Man of Steel.
You are not allowed to breathe.
I haven't seen it yet. I just saw Star Trek for the first time. I saw Into Darkness for the first time last night.
That
right?
came but out in May.
Good. Good job, Fur. I'm mostly with you, Trey. It's what bothered me personally about Man of Steel was that when I first watched it, I really dug it. And then I went back and watched the original 78 Superman and Superman 2 shortly thereafter. And I realized, like, Man of Steel is like a truncated version of those two films.
Yeah.
But replace anything clever Superman does with punch it in the face.
Yeah, but...
And that's basically Man of Steel.
But that's also a version of Superman we've seen in the comic books, so it's... That doesn't make it good, but it means that I understand how someone got there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And sadly, another universe where Jonathan Kent dies. Oh. I like my Jonathan Kent alive.
His most pointless death of all of Jonathan Kent's deaths.
Well, you know, it's... And why the heck hasn't he gone to college? That's one thing I don't like. It's... Clark Kent's supposed to have a friggin' journalism degree. He does not in this new universe, yet he's working at the Daily Planet. In an industry where newspapers are getting rid of any non-necessary staff.
Mm.
Poor planet. Writers.
See, that's something, that's another one of those human elements of Clark Kent that I enjoy seeing, is like that concept of, yeah, he can do all these amazing things, but he actually has this passion for journalism.
Yeah.
I think that's cool.
It's a man who is more than just the ability to punch a robot into outer space.
Mm.
You know, he has hobbies and likes and dislikes. Human being.
He feels things. He...
What are these
longs
emotions
for human
you
touch.
Humans speak of?
He enjoys conversing and touching
even,
animals like most human beings.
Because even though Reeves still did the, you know, in going back to that, you know, the Christopher Reeves films, even though Reeves did the Superman as the real person, Clark as the persona, he still had the legitimate interest in being a reporter. Like, there was still a core there that I think we're missing in the current films other than... What am I to do with all of this strength? Oh no,
yeah.
I must hide.
I guess the one other thing that really bothered me in Man of Steel was hearing Jonathan Kent say to his son, should I let those guys die? And John go, maybe.
You know what I didn't like about Man of Steel is Jonathan Kent's scene where he died. There is a tornado coming, and people are running under the overpass. Anyone who has lived in a tornado-prone area knows you never, under any circumstances, go under the overpass. You get down in the ditch and cover your head. If you go into an overpass, those askers, wind tunnels and high-speed debris will slaughter you. You never go under the overpass. That is
so
the first thing you learn in tornado safety.
Then he let himself die to save a dog.
Things you learn in the Midwest,
there
ladies and gentlemen.
There was a ditch 10 feet away from him. 10 feet. He could have run, driven to the ground. The tornado with its horizontal winds would have been completely parallel to him. He would have been fine. And in fact, everyone else should have died.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Man of Steel. I want to go back and say that. I enjoyed Man of Steel, but that scene bugged the crap out of me.
I should probably clarify, I also did. I enjoyed the movie. I have issues. I overanalyze everything, and that's probably why I do YouTube videos. That's my mindset.
And I didn't see it.
And Fur didn't see it.
Weren't we talking about DC at Comic-Con like a minute ago?
DC Cinematic Universe, mostly.
I guess this transitions into the real question, though, with all the stuff we talked about. How is DC going to do a Justice League movie? Like, they keep saying they're going to do it, but do you guys actually think that this is going to happen?
No.
I think it might happen without Wonder Woman. I'm just going to go out there and
then it can't happen.
No, they're going to do because with a Flash film, and by connecting Batman in, without having to do a reboot of the Batman film franchise, they'll have a Batman introduced into the universe with the new Superman movie. Because, again, you can drop in Batman and everyone's like, I know who Batman is. They've been trying to do this for years because, you know, with the flop of the Green Lantern, they kind of screwed themselves. But, hey, that's because Hal Jordan's a boring, terrible character.
Right? He's better as a Spectre.
Let's go back to how badly they screwed up the Green Lantern. When the Green Lantern came out, it was when Justice League Unlimited was either still on the air or just off the air, and you had a whole generation of kids that knew Jon Stewart. Mm-hmm. You could have done a Jon Stewart movie, and it probably would have done about 10 times better at the box office. I'm just going to go out there on a limb.
Well, let's even look at, I mean, Hal Jordan, like you said, he's just a boring character. Even in the animated Superman series, when they did Hal Jordan's origin, they didn't even use Hal Jordan. They used Kyle Rayner, because Kyle Rayner has a personality.
Well, Kyle Rayner was also currently wearing the ring in the comics.
Right.
So someone picking up on that, DC did a lot of that with, including skipping Jason Todd in their animated universe, which everything's better when you skip Jason Todd. God, the most aneurysm-inducing thing that happened to me was when Jason Todd came back to life, because Jason Todd was the one guy who was supposed to stay dead. There are three people who are supposed to stay dead: Batman's parents and Jason Todd.
Trey, you weren't happy with the cartoon Young Justice because Jason Todd's only appearance is literally his gravestone.
That would, Jason Todd is a blight across any universe, and screw Jason Todd. Get back to being dead. That's just all I'm saying.
He gave us that really good animated movie. I liked that one, Under the Red Hood, but
I disagree. Like, I didn't see it, but I disagree because Jason Todd was breathing and therefore wrong.
I presumed he died at the end of that movie, though, but I guess Grant Morrison told me that was wrong recently, but.
Oh, no. Jason Todd should stay dead. And Stephanie Brown should exist. There, I've said it. I've said my piece. We're okay now.
We'll have to talk about the new 52 in a later segment.
Can we not?
Another episode in which I cry a lot and then tell you to read The Movement.
Oh, man.
Don't worry, I'll be right there with you. Yeah, I'm kind of with... I don't know if the Justice League movie is going to happen. I just can't take DC seriously because they keep saying that they want it to happen, but then they keep making all the wrong moves for it. So if it does happen, I feel like it's going to be a really sad Justice League movie. Like, not in that it would be emotionally moving, just it's going to be like, you know, Flash, Batman, Superman, and maybe they'll call up Booster Gold or some other character.
Yeah, Booster Gold.
No. I think it's going to be an actual sad film. I think it's going to be 2 hours of Batman crying and Superman eating chocolate. This is what it's going to be.
God forbid, if there's anything Man of Steel did teach me about DC's current outlook, it's God forbid we have any whimsy in these movies. So maybe it will be an actual sad movie.
Funny.
I'm just saying, someone did a composite of all the actors who have played Superman. Well, at least most of them. Not all of them, but most of the modern ones. Chris Reeves, Tom Welling, Brendan Routh, and Dean Cain. And they put them all together, and the face looked almost exactly like the guy who played Superboy in the 1980s.
That's really weird.
No, it's creepy. It's almost like they keep casting guys who look exactly the same.
As if they were playing the same character or something.
That's one thing Man of Steel did make me laugh about. Young Clark looked like Tom Welling. I got a laugh there.
I'm just saying, I would have loved the Tom Welling Superman movie.
I'd have gone to that. I honestly would have gone to that.
I just feel bad for Tom Welling because he doesn't get to be Superman.
I feel bad for the guy who played Green Arrow on Smallville when they announced that Arrow was going to be a thing and that he wasn't invited back.
That guy also did the pilot for an Aquaman show before he played Green Arrow. It didn't get picked up, but so he had a pilot that never got picked up, and then he found out a show was being made about a character he played on TV. Let's just feel really bad for this dude.
And we don't even know his name. That's the ultimate.
I could look it up, but I really don't feel like it's that important.
With that, I think I'm... that really wraps up San Diego Comic-Con and the future of the DC Cinematic Universe. And I think it's probably time to put...
it's Batman crying for 2 hours and Superman eating chocolate. There's your answer.
Rachel! I think it's time we turn this over to Fur.
Thank you, Nick. Well, I'm here to talk about something that I am obsessed with this week, and I'm sure I will be obsessed with for at least the next week before I move on to something else.
I think all three of us are now.
Three of us are currently obsessed with this thing. It's been out for not exactly a year. It's gone on now for about a year and a month. Their one-year anniversary is back in June. Imagine, if you will, Stephen King sitting in a radio booth and just talking about what could possibly be happening in his life and around him. In an NPR-type show.
I like to think that of it as Miskatonic University Radio.
Miskatonic University, yep. That is exactly the premise behind the radio show Welcome to Night Vale by Commonplace Books. It is a twice-monthly podcast that takes place in the city of Night Vale, being told through the mouth of one Cecil...
Baldwin.
Baldwin, yes, that was his last name. Cecil Baldwin. In the most soothing voice I can possibly imagine. I mean, NPR has nothing on this guy. Makes death threats sound just absolutely calming. but it is just the most absolutely fantastic thing that I've heard of, and it's actually picked up a lot of steam lately. It took a year for, I think, a lot of people to really... I mean, at least it's making its way up to this neck of the woods, finally.
It exploded in July.
Yeah.
It exploded in July.
Something happened in July, and... all over my Tumblr dash, all over my Facebook feed, followed the rule of three people need to be unrelated and talking about it for me to like be like, okay, I need to pick this up and listen to it. And I have not regretted it. I've burned through about 20 episodes of it in the past week. I started listening to it on Wednesday night, and I'm almost done with it, at least caught up to it. It is...
Oh, you haven't gotten to... You haven't... Oh, okay.
You haven't got
episode 27 yet. It's
great. Not yet. No, I'm up to 1 year anniversary, but it is something that I hope goes on for a while because it is. I found myself quoting it more and more. I think, as I do when I get creepily obsessed with things.
Dogs are forbidden
in the dog park. It's just a quirky, weird. Not really nightmare fuel, not really creepypasta.
Wobegon. Keeler, but weirder.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, it kind of has a Twin Peaks feel to it, too, in a way. Like, their recurring characters are there. And it's so weird. You get to kind of form not necessarily an emotional bond, but... I mean, you can be listening to it, and in episode 20, they'll mention something that happened back in episode 3, and you'll remember immediately what they were talking about.
It's got a very strong continuity.
Yeah, I mean, it's I love listening to it. Hopefully it continues for a little bit longer. It seems like they're going to continue now that it's really just picked up a lot more in the past month, activity-wise, across the internet. Nick, how far are you in the show? I know you just started.
I'll admit I've only gotten through the first episode in its entirety because the first I'd heard of it, I'd seen it mentioned on Tumblr, and I wasn't sure what the deal was. And eventually when we were putting this podcast together, both you and Trey had mentioned it, and I'm like, okay, what is Night Vale? I have no idea what this is. And it's weird because I'm really into old-time radio shows and I listen to Prairie Home Companion quite a bit. And I was, and it, this is really something that was right up my alley, and I loved the one episode I listened to, and I cannot wait to hear more of this thing because it's just awesome.
You get to hear Cecil fall in love with Carlos. It's so wonderful.
Beautiful, yes. Beautiful Carlos.
I noticed and that
beautiful hair.
Beautiful hair. Which we despair, hate, and love at the exact same time.
But you know it. What I like about the series is, I mean, it's done straight as community radio, but they really do kind of thread that continuity throughout, and it's a very strong story. Now, I can tell you that the reason it picked up in July, and they've kind of are pretty sure this is why, is because the Hannibal fandom discovered it on Tumblr.
No way, really?
Yeah, the Hannibal fandom. Hannibal. It's all Hannibal's fault. The show I actually refuse to watch. and maybe I'll watch it in a few years if it continues, like I eventually did for Supernatural, but which I now love. But the Hannibal fandom discovered it, and then that's what caused the massive blow up. They apparently had like at the end of June like 140,000 listens, and then like at the within July they had 140,000 listens alone just within that time.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
What is it that the Hannibal fandom found in it? I mean,
well, it's just that they enjoy the dark humor of it. That's the current theory. They just know it got passed around the Hannibal fandom blogs on Tumblr.
And yeah, the dark humor of this show is absolutely fantastic. I mean, they make jokes about missing children and you laugh about it. I mean, this is...
I know.
Like, what is it? My favorite thing was just one of the recent episodes I listened to, they mentioned, and now some safety tips for parents... who are taking their children to play out in the sand bluffs. It appears all the children in Nightvale are missing today, so there's no need to do any safety tips. Yeah. I mean, just like stuff like this. And it's horrible, but you laugh at it because it's just the darkest humor read in the driest voice.
Well, it's, and yeah, Nightvale, I feel bad for not having discovered it sooner. That's what I feel like when I listen to this thing. I have listened to every episode except for the most recent one, the summer reading program.
I'm just about there. I'm trying to actually stave off listen to the last few, and I'm gonna try and knock them out tomorrow night when I'm trying to be in bed at an early time to wake up to work at 6 in the morning. Cecil's voice can help me drift off to sleep.
I do feel really bad that I wasn't into this earlier, because this is so cool. I kind of wish I was with it from the ground floor, so to speak.
Well, now you get to be with it while it continues, as soon as exactly. You listen to 27 more episodes.
And they go quick. I mean, like, yeah. That's...
They're 20 to 30 minutes, so they're not long.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of the weather. I always enjoy the weather, and Welcome to Night Vale, which, for those who haven't listened to it, a certain point during each episode, Cecil throws it over to the weather, which is just some independent song that was sent into them,
yeah, or
that
they found. Yeah, that's the weather.
And they have some great weather, great tunes on the weather. Dengue Fever, which is kind of a bigger band, I was surprised to hear them on the weather at one point. So, yeah, enjoyable music and enjoyable show all around. If you haven't started listening to it yet, I highly recommend it. Again, that's Welcome to Night Vale by Commonplace Books. The website is commonplacebooks. I want to say com. Let me double check on that. I don't want to send people to the wrong place. But they have a donation page. I recommend donating to it. I have not yet. I'm going to be because this is something that I want to keep going for quite some time. Buy a t-shirt, buy a book. All that good stuff. Yes, that is commonplacebooks.com. Good. Excellent.
So I would buy a t-shirt, but they're always out of stock.
Right? I think it's... They're constantly reprinting them, and they go out right away. So... Yeah. I've already started talking Night Vale cosplays with groups of friends, and I already have in the works... I'm planning on doing a Night Vale community radio intern shirt, just like stitching my name in it.
Hey, something remember, simple like that. Dana, we should throw food to her over the wall at the dog park.
She's trapped there forever. She wasn't able to choose her end.
Oh, we can't text her back because my phone just starts bleeding.
Oh, man. Yeah. go check this out if you haven't.
Tooth Fairy could just be Dana's doppelganger.
Could be. It could be her double from that horrible sandstorm, which brought over some people from the awful, awful city of Desert Bluffs. Terrible people, those people in Desert Bluffs.
This control room is far too dry. Where's all the blood?
So, with that, I think we can move on to another thing that's kind of been happening on the internet lately.
Yes.
I know you're all excited about it. For those who aren't familiar, back in 2006, a fanfiction was posted on fanfiction.net that was baffling. Baffling, painful, confusing. It was posted in the Harry Potter tag because it was vaguely based on Harry Potter.
It's completely based on Harry Potter, just very poorly.
Very poorly based on Harry Potter. I am talking, of course, about My Immortal.
The greatest English language has ever had, really.
Just the worst thing that, yeah, it's just a thing that exists. Poorly written. Language is bad. It was passed around among cons. I mean, dramatic readings have been made. It follows the story of a girl, Ennaby. I don't even care what her whole name is.
Ebony Darkness Dementia Raven Way.
Raven Way, yes.
I think it's Celtic.
It's Celtic, right? And as she follows around the main characters of Harry Potter, of course, Harry Potter's not Harry anymore. He's known as Vampire Potter. And Ron is known as Diablo. And it's just the biggest Mary Sue story ever created. Well, thankfully, the intelligent folks over at Media Freak Productions.
People you've never heard of.
People you've never heard of.
At the production level of us.
At the production level of us. I'll get their name right here. We're just going to hold on while my computer loads.
But will we? Fill any time with airspace.
Fill any time with airspace.
That made no sense.
The folks over at MyImmortalSeries.com decided to pick this up and make it into a web series.
No.
Yes. And it is... They're releasing it. They started in mid-July, and they have begun releasing it once every few days. They're doing a 6-episode series. And all I can say is thank God they're not doing it word for word from the fan fiction. Because I don't think I could bear to see them describing Draco putting in his thing into her his boy thingy into her you know what in the Forbidden Forest. They've written a really fantastically clever adaptation of My Immortal.
The best part, I have to say, is episode 3, Snap and Lupin.
Snap and Lupin, which...
those two guys, if they need to start acting professionally, because I would watch, 3 hours of those guys.
Their back and forth has just been fantastic in that episode. The highlight of the series so far. And, I think they should make it, make their own series. Go into acting on their own. But it is everything that I'd hoped it would be. When the trailer got released back in, I want to say it was May, they released a trailer for it. I couldn't believe that this was happening. This was a thing. I mean, the fan fiction actually disappeared off the internet for about 2 years until somebody decided to repost it to fanfiction.net. The poor girl that wrote it was, I guess, just got flamed so hard that she pulled it down.
You know what? It's debate. You know, there's a lot of controversy about whether or not it was a genuine fanfic,
or whether it was a troll fic.
But no one's sure. There's no solid evidence. There's people who have claimed to. There are several people who have claimed to have written it, but they all simultaneously claim to have written it. So,
There's certain parts in it in particular that make me question it. I mean, she makes really bizarre references to Lord of the Rings in some parts of it.
Doesn't Marty McFly make a cameo?
Marty McFly makes a cameo. Yeah. I mean, she talks about Tom Bombadil, which, I mean, only people that have read Lord of the Rings would know about. I mean, that's...
It's not clear if Tara Gillespie was ever ever actually a person, or that was the name of the author on the website.
Yeah.
But who cares?
But who cares, because it's a really funny web series right now. And if you haven't,
lampoon on fanfic in general.
Yeah, I think actually, are we allowed? What are we allowed on our language here? Because there's one line in particular from Lupin where
I'll read you a disclaimer first, real quick. Parents, please be aware that strong language may be included in the rest of the podcast. If you have small children, cover their ears and pray to God that you can wipe their memory with a roofie later.
Forget me now, I think you mean.
Motherfucker.
but there's a part where they're all going to confront Snap and Lupin, and Ebony shows up, and they're all, and I think Snap and Lupin both say, "Who are you?" She describes herself, and Lupin just says, "Oh shit, it's a Mary Sue." And they get into this fight, and she destroys both of them.
Including stabbing one through the chest with which made me sad, because it means he can't come back.
No, well, they were clones, if you recall.
Well,
so they could come back.
If it's true to the source material, then death does not stop a character from coming back.
So, but it's happening right now. Actually, the episode 4 releases tomorrow.
Yeah, because they're doing it weekly.
Yep. So the new episode is out tomorrow. That's myimmortalseries.com. And, yeah. Highly recommend it, because it is everything you would hope that a terrible fan fiction would turn into at some point in its life.
Huzzah.
With that, I believe Nick would like to talk about giant robots.
Oh, yeah. Bonesaws, pretty. Are you? So, Let me restart. So I don't think I'm alone when I say that I feel that Pacific Rim was the most fun I've had in a movie this summer.
It is better than all other things.
I can't think of a single thing I enjoyed more ever than Pacific Rim, honestly. I mean, and I witnessed the birth of my daughter, and Pacific Rim ranks right up there. I mean, it's...
So basically the moment...
You just look at her and go, you weren't fighting a robot on your way out.
Right?
The moment that this movie was announced, like when I hear Guillermo del Toro working on a giant robot fighting monster movie, I for one was freaking psyched. I mean, we're all from that generation. Giant robots have been a part of just this nerd culture that we've been in for a long time. All three of us have run anime conventions. There was that while there when giant robot anime was some of the only stuff coming over here. And for like my first anime was actually Robotech, which got me into Gundam, which got me into being obsessed with giant robots for the rest of my life. I've been watching
Gigantor.
Damn right, Gigantor, giant the original giant mecha. And this movie, if you haven't seen it, shame on you and everyone in your family.
I agree.
I don't even feel like that's an overstatement. This movie is all sorts of fun. It's not deep. It's not, you know, it's not going to be one of those movies that makes you reconsider every choice you've made in your life.
Yes, it will.
Well, except maybe for why you're so bitter and depressed about everything when a movie this fun exists.
Yes.
The setup is pretty simple. And to their credit, the prologue to this movie is perfect. It is literally perfect in every way, because it explains what's going on and just lets the action get going.
It's technically not perfect. It mistranslates the meaning of kaiju.
Oh, well. I can still forgive it, because I don't know. I think that there was just... They never get prologues like this in movies anymore. They want to let you see all this crap in real time in a lot of movies now, and no.
I think they set the movie up in essentially 10 minutes, didn't they? That was, if it was that long, I think it was like a 5-minute introduction saying, hey, giant monsters are attacking things, here's our solution, and now our solution's not necessarily going over as well as we wanted it to.
Exactly. You know, there's an alternate universe, monsters come out of it, the best way to fight these things are giant robots. We tried conventional weapons, giant robots work better. We need two people to pilot the giant robots. Go.
Like, and honestly, I was making a lot of inhuman noises when you get to see the first Jaeger fight. Just when the two pilots are going into the Jaeger, Agatha, my fiance, was sitting right next to me, and she looked over at me and said, "Are you going to be okay?" Because I was sitting there, just like my arms were gripped to the armrests. I was squealing with just how cool everything was with them, you know, getting into their flight suits and just the synchronatic movements and
To give you an idea, it was very similar in my theater because keep in mind my girlfriend, who I've been with for the last 3 years, we met because I was doing a Gundam panel at one of the conventions we run. So she's every bit as into giant robots as I am. As soon as they start up the Jaegers, which is what they call the robots in these movies, we were both like just turned into 7-year-olds. We're just freaking out in the back of this theater. I've never been so excited to see this on a screen in my life.
Yeah, no, it's... Let me tell you, this is a film that got me to go out to a regular theater during the summer because it didn't come to any of the drive-ins when it first came out in my area. And I live in Indiana, and you can throw a rock and hit a drive-in down here. And drive-ins are the best way to see summer movies, by the way, if you've never done it, because the screen makes IMAX screens look tiny. And I was very disappointed, so I had to actually go out to a regular theater, although it will come as the second feature to the drive-ins in a few weeks, so I get to, like, be happy. The film is just great because so often films these days are cynical and dark. And being an optimistic film does not mean you lack nuance. The film had plenty of nuance. It had some phenomenal performances from many of the actors.
I just don't remember their character names.
I remember the character names.
I don't remember. I remember most of the character names, not all of them. I will say the lead is the character whose name I forget the most. Because
I just call him Jax from Sons of Anarchy. I just call him Jax.
It's Rally, not Rally. He gets upset when you call Rally in a fake Australian accent.
Rally.
But I will say that, you know, it's... I will say that I don't feel like he ended up having a lot of acting to do in the film. But I like the fact that the connection between the lead and Mako was not... romantic.
Overtly sexual?
It was not sexual. It was, I mean, it could have been eventually, who knows, you know.
It was going in a healthy way. It was moving in a healthy direction.
Yeah.
It was not a movie about romance, but it didn't, like, say anything negative about it. It was an optimistic film in a world where everything is, you know, let's make it dark and gritty. And it's not to say that it was a innocent film, you know, many characters died.
Most of the pilots died. I mean, like, it's...
I was going to say, what, is it 3 Jaeger pilots make it through the whole film?
Two of them.
No, yep, because one of them's injured and doesn't go into that.
Oh, the guy's dad, yeah.
Yeah, he's fine. So you've got 3 living Jaeger pilots?
We started with at least, like, what, 9?
Yeah, well, there's, yeah.
And Typhoon, 2 for Cherno Alpha, 2 for two for Striker Eureka, 2 for Gypsy Danger, and then you have Idris Elba.
Technically, Gypsy Danger is piloted by 3 people in that film.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah, so Striker Eureka. Striker Eureka is also piloted by 3 people. Come on, Striker Eureka is my boy. I'm not going to forget that.
Yeah. But he counted Idris Elba, though.
So. Oh, he did, yes.
Yeah.
The other thing that's great in this movie is that there's so many... Like, yeah, it's optimistic. It's not, you know, America saves the world. It's everyone saves the world. And it also loves its source material.
Yeah.
Like, you get so many of these movies where it's like, well, we know we're basing this on something cheesy, like things like The Lone Ranger, where they are so cynical and hateful and spiteful toward its source material.
Well, the problem with The Lone Ranger is they tried to make a film that could only be marketed on nostalgia based on a property that most of the people who actually remember the original product are over the age of 50.
Right.
There was no Lone Ranger series in my lifetime, and I'm about to turn 33 in a month.
Brian is an old man, ladies and gentlemen, is what we're saying here.
Like, even if there was one, though, that movie was so spiteful toward the concepts of the original. It's like, this is so dumb.
And yes, this, yet still they put a man in red face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Apache Tracker.
But then you,
look, but it's okay because he's Apache now.
Yeah. I hate that. The bottom of my heart. But on a serious note, like, this movie had this complete love for all those old Godzilla flicks. It had this real love for all the old giant robot anime. You have Guillermo del Toro even saying in interviews how he wanted the kaiju to look like a man could fit in the rubber suit of them. Yeah. And talking about how he loved Gigantor and Patlabor before...
Patlabor.
Before doing something like this, yeah.
Who doesn't love Patlabor?
If you don't, you can't be my friend. I'm sorry.
If you don't, you don't have a soul.
In fact, I don't think you even exist if you don't like it.
That show just got re-released on DVD and Blu-ray. There's no reason to not pick up Patlabor, really.
I need to invest in that because I have all my Patlabor stuff's on VHS, which means since I haven't hooked up my VHS player in over 6 years, I don't know how I would ever watch it.
the Blu-ray of the original OVA is pretty nice. I have that.
Ooh, I don't have a Blu-ray player, so...
The DVD is nice, too.
Okay. Because if I watch HD content through electronic means because I live in the modern age.
Suddenly this is turning into a tech podcast.
Hey, nerd is in the title. I don't know what counts.
It is, yeah.
We hit all those bases. But yeah, you have all this real love for the genres that it's being based on, and you get an awesome, just feel-good movie out of it. Like, I could take a kid to this, and I wouldn't feel bad about it. And I don't get that often with these sci-fi adventure movies, and I'm not complaining at all.
I'm just getting this image of Nick going up to a random couple in the street, like, can I take your kid to a movie? Would that be cool?
Well, you know what I like? You know what I like about Pacific Rim? Is that even though it's still within a pre-established genre and there are obvious, like, things that, like, inspired it, Pacific
right.
Rim is a new thing.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a new idea. It's not, like, as much as I love the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, Legend of S.H.I.E.L.D. Watch me equate the Impact Comics character S.H.I.E.L.D. with the Marvel organization S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's just inappropriate because the Impact Comics version was also just an adaptation of the old Archie Red Circle versions. And it's important to note that the S.H.I.E.L.D. character by Archie Comics, or Mighty Comics, I think at the time, came out a full 2 months before Captain America, making him the original red, white, and blue superhero.
And was also the reason why Cap has a circular S.H.I.E.L.D. so that they wouldn't sue.
Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, God. I own copies of the early 90s DC licensed Impact books, Legend of the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Jesus.
Oh, I do. And I've got the Crusaders as well. I don't have the new stuff that they did based on those properties. I just have their... But I want to point out, Mark Waid was in charge of the Comet in there. And that was some of his early stuff he did for DC. And that's why the Comet run of Impact Comics is really good. And you should read it. Because you can probably buy all the issues for like a quarter altogether. It's an 18 issues and an annual, and like they are worth no money. Nobody wants them. And if you've got a copy of the Comet number 2, I really want it because I've got every issue except for that one. Wow, I went somewhere there.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Pacific Rim's an original thing.
Yes.
It's not a remake. It's not based off the comic. It's not a sequel. It's not based off the toy. It is
The toys are awesome.
Well, right, but the toys are based off of it, as opposed to... That's why I say anybody who goes to a Transformers film and complains about the plot needs to remember that it says based off the toy. If it's a pretty accurate description of slamming two toys together... You've created an accurate version of the film, and if you were expecting anything else, you walked into the wrong theater. Pacific Rim, on the other hand, has to actually put a good story with the giant robots, which it did.
For some reason, I'm more okay with that explanation for G.I. Joe Retaliation, which was a hilarious movie.
It's based off the toy. I just love the fact that Duke dies almost immediately.
I loved that they set up, like, you had a great power dynamic in this movie, because it definitely wasn't the one where the hero is absolutely powerful, and then it takes something crazy to put the hero at a disadvantage. Right from the beginning, they show the Jaegers and the Kaiju are basically equal, and any factor could mean that one is going to completely murderate the other.
Yeah, murderate. That's a word.
I like that one. I'm cool with that word.
Dictionary, page 72.
But I will say G.I. Joe Retaliation, to say one thing for it, it was the best film in which terrorists took over the White House all year. Three movies. One premise.
It could be worse. It could be two mall cop movies coming out within the span of 6 months.
Let's not even think about those.
I never saw that, so I'm going to go with who cares?
Indeed, who cares?
Well, yeah, we had Pacific Rim was really something that I, as off bait track as we've gotten with this, this is the kind of movie that we really should be supporting, because this is something that it was a big movie that's trying to appeal to our kind of nerdy demographic, but really anyone could sit down and enjoy this movie so long as they're willing to enjoy it and not question how realistic is this giant robot or this monster or this whatever, and just accept that there's, you know, that this is a fun movie.
Yeah.
And we're going to get a chance to support it, because it actually looks like it's headed for a sequel, based on the fact that it brought in $9 million in China when it was released.
Set a record.
Yeah, it's unheard of over there.
Yeah.
It's definitely got some type of a cult following, because I am a toy collector, and pretty much right after the movie I wanted to get a figure of Gypsy Danger, the main robot, and I couldn't find the damn thing anywhere.
Well, the international ticket sales were huge on this film. It did only okay in the U.S., but it went really well overseas.
Mm.
So,
man, like, no, as soon as I found out that Striker Eureka and Leatherback, the kaiju that kind of looked like a gorilla, were getting a toy release, Nick brought that to my attention. I'm like, well, that's $60 that I'm going to be throwing out of my pocket. And just, I need those in my life.
For what it's worth, the Gypsy Danger toy is fracking fantastic.
Well, that's included, I think, with the Striker. There's a Gypsy Danger Battle Damage that's going to be released with the Leatherback and Striker Eureka. So
I can't wait to see what that figure looks like.
Right? They haven't shown any pictures of it yet.
So. Yeah,
it's going to be just the head. And a couple little escape pods.
Maybe you can see a little, it depends on which battle damage you're doing.
Yeah, it could be a big hole in the chest with one of the pilots missing.
I was going to say, yeah, do a face torn open, and if they really wanted to go out there, have a replacement hand for Knife Head with a little Yancey in his hand. That'd be, oh, yeah.
Oh, we are terrible human beings.
That's dark, really. Well, hey, you know, you can say we're terrible human beings, but they have put out at least 3 Luke Skywalker action figures with removable hands, where that was a selling point on the figure, so I refuse to feel bad.
But was it the short blade in the hand lightsaber on the... No, wow. Oh, God. I should not have thought of that reference. Anyways, do we have any more to talk about on Pacific Rim beyond all agreeing that it's the best thing that has ever happened to cinema anywhere and anytime, and you should all be thanking Guillermo del Toro every moment of every day?
Support Arsenal movies, damn it.
I agree. Support Pacific Rim. Go buy it. When it comes
or
out.
Go see it. Like, I'm going to go see it again.
I would very much like to also go see that again.
Go see it again.
It's already.
Hmm?
just a little side note that I have here that is unrelated to anything we're talking about toy purchases. I am about 5 seconds away from ordering the creepy-faced Woody doll off of Amazon.com because it's there and I want it.
The creepy-faced Woody doll?
Have you not seen that thing?
It's become a favorite for image macros and pictures and stuff. They take the Revoltech Toy Story 3 and give it a really creepy face.
Revoltech Toy Story 3 toy?
Yeah, there's Revoltech Toy Story 3 toy.
Well, that's, and you can like,
because you know, when I see a toy cowboy, I just want to pose him more.
This you will, because it's all here. I'm gonna send you a link to this. Let's see if I can.
If you send me a link, you're gonna make a noise in the podcast. Let's I'm picking up the audio.
God, I hope we can edit this out. Well, anyway, with that,
we're keeping it.
Okay.
All 1 hour 38 minutes of this. Let's hope our fans really love the sound of our voice.
Well, it won't be that long when I cut out the few key parts and when we summon the demon.
We need to get that out. We don't want to get
that'll it be gone. So I think we've wasted enough of our poor listeners' time.
Dear listeners.
Dear listeners, we hope you have a wonderful, pleasant evening. May all of your children still be inside and with all of their limbs. And a very special goodbye from myself, Professor Fur.
Yes, have a good night, everyone.
And Nikazumi.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
And please join us next time on Nerd and Tie, the classiest waste of time ever.
Have a good night.